Balancing Family Life and Ministry on the Field is a ministry session we're about to hear from Dr. J.B. Godfrey. Dr. Godfrey serves as the Far East Director of Baptist International Missions Incorporated and also teaches missions at West Coast Baptist College. This session was part of the Spiritual Leadership Conference 2010, hosted by Dr. Paul Chappell and the Lancaster Baptist Church.
Would you, let's start in 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7. I'll just read one verse and we'll start right into this. And while you're finding that, some of you I know, others I do not. Most of you, many of you I do know, just so that you know a little bit about me and what we're going to talk about in here. My wife and I have been missionaries for, well, we joined BIMI in 1973. And we went to France for a year and a half and studied French and moved to Africa. To French-speaking Africa, not one neighbor we had spoke French. And so we had to jump in on another language. And we worked with Muslims in the Sahara Desert for 16 years. And then in 1989, we were asked to move to a different country. And we ended up 400 miles out in the jungle of the Congo. And we had some interesting time. We 400 miles to electricity. And 2 kilometers down a mountain to water to take a bath or wash your clothes. My kids have pet chimpanzees, and we ate monkey and jungle rat. And if a grasshopper got in church, it didn't get out. And then the last 9 years, I've been Far East Field Director, which meant from Africa in 3 African languages. We switched worlds, not trying to, not wanting to, but a little bit with the feet dragging, but for 9 years, we have traveled Mongolia, China, Korea, and Japan, Taiwan, Philippines, Guam, Saipan, Tinian, the Northern Pacific Islands, including, I'm director of Hawaii. And there's no more heathen place in the world than Hawaii either. But I want to speak today about balancing family life and ministry on the mission field. And of all that you, I know you've had some great topics. I've been in several of the sessions and they've really been good. I personally feel like this is one I wish I could talk to everyone, because I believe that when missionaries, and this, many of these, it would apply to pastoring in the States, church planting also, but I believe that most missionaries who leave the field, they will say that it's for a variety of reasons, but an educated guess would say 9 times out of 10 it is family related, or at least it has some implications with the family. So let's read that verse now, 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 7, and we could read all these first verses here in chapter 3, but verse 7 says, "Likewise ye husbands, dwell with them," that is with your wives, "according to knowledge." Now, to know something, you have to study sometime. So you don't automatically, guys, you don't automatically know your wives or a lot about them. You probably understand that by now. And if you're not, if you don't, do not yet have a wife or a husband, just hang on. "Giving honor unto the wife as unto the weaker vessel, and being heirs together of the grace of life, that your prayers be not hindered." We need to take care of our families. Ruth Tucker, one of the books we use here in the history of missions, is Ruth Tucker's book, From Jerusalem to Irian Jaya. Now, you and I would not agree with everything in that book, nor every person she covers. However, it is a very honestly written book. She's very frank, and in that book, she tells a very sad story about one family in missions that was shipwrecked. And I just want to read one quote from her book to you. "Yet, with a heart that reached out to the whole world, Bob Pierce was unable to sustain the most intimate bonds of love with his own family. The love that he gave so freely to homeless orphans and ravished flood victims was given so sparingly to the ones who needed it most, his wife and daughters." Now, I read that not to criticize Bob Pierce, that I don't know the man. I feel sorry for him after just reading that. But I read that simply to state that we do need some work in this area. And I'll tell you a little more why. In fact, my introduction in the session, if you're looking for, it's 104 -1 if you're not there yet. And I will give some practical things later, but my introduction will be a little longer. Missionary wives can be and are often neglected. Not on purpose, maybe, but... Thank you, sir. You have to scream at me. When you're used to speaking without electricity and mics, makes it fun. I am not easily distracted. Many years, it was so hot where we lived, I wore sandals. And I would be up preaching, and the little kids would play with the hair on my toes while I preached. So, missionary wives can be neglected. Sometimes missionary kids are sent away. Not as much anymore because the days of boarding schools, not as common. There are ways today, thank the Lord for Becca and BJ and AC and other great programs to educate your children. But missionary kids can be sent away. But if and when they're not, they're still often on display. And missionary kids need to be helped and encouraged. I like to call them kid missionaries. Because they're not just missionary kids, they're kid missionaries. And those children will get you into places you could never get. Imagine, we lived in a place where, when we moved down to the Congo, our folk had never seen a white lady or a white child in their lives. And they would walk for miles and say, Pastor Jonas, would you have your wife and kids come out on the porch? They just wouldn't look at them. And when I would go preach, they would bring 5 chairs outside the church. And I would sit, my wife and our 3 younger children, and people would come by the hundreds, and they would walk around, and they would feel my girl's hair. One of my girls has natural curly red hair. She got it from me. But y'all don't have... We'll just leave that. They'd never seen a man with hair on his body before. They would just rub my arms. So anyway, missionary—they're kid missionaries. Our children, by the way, loved it. I don't feel sorry for missionary children. But Pearl Buck, not the best example maybe of a missionary kid, except a lot of her life was influenced by the bitterness she had. She said this about missionary kids. They're partly at home everywhere and not fully at home anywhere. Before school starts here every year, we have a day. Dr. Siskin, Brother Toby England, and I have a day for missionary kids. And we just have some fun with them. And I tell them, missionary kids are weird. But it's not bad weird. It's just weird. We're different. Different is not bad. And we tell them, don't you let the young American kids make you feel bad because you don't speak the language they speak. And you're not up to, you know, you don't do the texting and some of the things, even though they may do that in the Philippines. It's texting. I've never seen so many folk there texting. But missionary kids are different. But they're not fully at home anywhere in the world. You know how you know if you've been a missionary kid for a long time? It's when you see a 7-year-old picture of yourself on somebody else's refrigerator. So we need to give attention to our wives and to our children. Now let me stop for a moment and say most missionaries have beautiful families. And they're a blessing and they're an example in my own experience on the mission field. For many years now, almost 20 years in Africa and 9 now working in the Far East, and I was pastor for 9 in between the two. My own experience on the field has been very good. There were 4 families of us who worked in a desert country with Muslims for many, many years, and we loved each other. We were different, but we just got along so well. And you hear all the harsh stories about missionaries. That does happen, but it doesn't have to happen. We heard it today in the message from Bob Robertson, die to self, don't have a big ego. But my experience has been so good. And the other missionaries had children along the same age of our kids. And what a blessing it was. But missionary families have some special difficulties. And we need to ask God to help us and if you're a pastor and you have folk out of your church, you need to help them. They need help. And sometimes we're afraid, we missionaries, we're afraid to ask for it because we don't want someone to think we might not be spiritual, okay? We want everyone to think we're spiritual giants and we never have any of these problems. And we need to keep tender hearts and an ability to forgive each other and to treat each other in a godly way. But let's admit, not all families are the same. How many of you had roommates in college or neighbors and pastors and assistant pastors or missionaries on the field? We actually are closer than blood relatives. I mean, we know things about each other that we wish we didn't know. For 20 years in our country, if you opened a private personal bank account, you'd write a check. It would be 2 months before you could get money from it. And I don't know any missionaries who can live 2 months without money. So Citibank let us have a mission account. But that meant that everybody's money went into that account. And all the time we were there, I did not wish to be, but I was the treasurer. I've got a mind for math, and they wanted me to do it. And that meant I knew every dime everybody had. I knew what they spent it on. I know that missionaries, any 2 months, they don't get the same amount of support. And one's well-supported and another one's struggling and it's all going. Anyway, you better know how to forgive each other and love each other and laugh. And you can do that, but missionaries need that encouragement. And then when you get on the mission field, some very interesting things begin. It may very well be your first experience or major experience with loneliness. Now, I'm giving you all this before I get to some practical points. If you've been there, you know what I'm talking about. Loneliness, being away from mom and dad, brothers and sisters, friends at church. Those of you who've been on the field know that when you come back on furlough after many years, you go to the first services and you stand there and you cry. To hear people singing, what a friend we have in Jesus in English. Yeah. to be around Christian friends, and it's a little overwhelming, but you get on the field and the loneliness sets in. And then one of the family members may not sympathize nor understand the other family member who's going through loneliness. And most often, forgive me for saying this, but most often that's the husband. And there's probably reasons why, because the husband, we get on the field and all this stuff has to be done. I mean, somebody's got to teach that class. And somebody's got to go visit these people. And somebody's got to whatever, fix the car, go to town and get supply. And it's easy for us men to forget that our wife or maybe the children, they're struggling with this thing of loneliness and being away from home and not having privacy. Now, how many of you would say that you like your privacy just a little bit? I like mine. Last year, my wife and I went to Kathmandu, Nepal. We have a married daughter, missionary, and two granddaughters in Kathmandu. And we got there. They were getting ready to have a baby. We got there one day. She had a baby the next day. And we have five children. They're all married. We have a dozen grandchildren and another one coming. But I did something in Nepal that I thought I would never do. I broke my own rule. I had always been proud of myself for not interfering with my married children's marriages and lives. But when I got there, they were living in a one-room, if I called it a shed, that would exaggerate. So no bathroom in this one room. They had a mattress on the floor and one side and a curtain to the end of the mat. That was the whole bedroom. And then the rest of the, and no chair. They don't use chairs. You sit on the floor for church, for eating. And my son-in-law delivered the baby on the floor on this little mattress. He read the book where there's no doctor. All right. We had a conversation.
And I told him, I said, you know, I know my girls were born in Africa. You know, too, that God has a sense of humor. My girls were born in Africa. They grew up speaking French, Wolof, and Kikongo. One of them married a Spanish pastor. The other one's in Kathmandu, Nepal. So, but anyway, I told my son-in-law, I said, you know, I know Lydia was born in Africa, and we grew up, we didn't have electricity. We went to an outhouse, but we had our own outhouse, all right? We had to go down the mountain to bathe in the river, but I said, you know, every new missionary wife needs she needs a place to cook. She needs a bathroom. She needs a room where she can just go and have a little privacy and put some pictures on the wall. And sometimes we men forget that. What I found intriguing was he had the latest computer and external hard drives and all kind of gadgets and all that. But anyway, he's not a bad kid. He's just dumb. But in their place, privacy doesn't exist. If your door's not locked, they come to the door, they just walk in. Talking about Nepalese. But it's not just Nepal, it's many places. Africa. You don't knock. You go to the door, kong, kong, kong. You don't answer. I mean, if the door's locked and they can't get in, they come to the window, look in to see what you're doing, why you can't come to the door. So you can be in a crowd but still be lonely and be, you know, we talk about culture shock. Believe me, it is real. It's usually the people that say they never have it that have it worse. And then in addition to that, I'm not trying to make this bad. I'm just being honest about it. You face this task of learning a language or a culture. You say, well, they speak English. Yeah, I know. A few years ago, I had 30 students from here to college with me in the Philippines. And we were out at Brother Rick Martin's place for several days, and we preached to thousands in public schools and in prisons and did Bible clubs. We had hundreds of people saved. But I laughed more because the group from here was speaking English. And the Filipinos were speaking English. And they did not have a clue what each other were saying. So if you're going to some place and they tell you they speak English, all right, you'll find out. It can be a lot of fun, but it also brings some problems. What if the husband picks the language up easily, but the wife, because she's expecting their fifth child, is struggling? I was preaching down in Georgia. I hate to keep doing this glasses thing, but when you get a certain age, I don't need them to look at you. I was preaching in Georgia, and this family was there. They were going to Mexico. They had 12 children. So smart aleck that I am, you know, I got up that night and said, the man with 12 kids is a lot more content than the man with $12 million. Because the man with $12 million, he wants some more. Now, the man with 12 kids, this guy ruined my joke. He raised his hand. He said, Brother Godfrey, we're expecting number 13. What I was really thinking was, I'm glad I'm not raising your support. But let's just be honest. It's harder. Well, let me back up and start over again a little bit. Normally, the wife will do better in the language. That's just normal. 9 times out of 10, God made women with a talent for a lot of things that we men don't have. But most of the time, wives do better in the language. And you get in language school, and it's 8 hours a day, and you studying. And we got a family now in Taiwan studying Chinese. And she had been a school teacher. She's smart. I mean, she's just breezing 30 new Chinese words a day. She breezes through them. He's still on number 5. And now you think, well, this couldn't happen in a family. You better watch jealousy. Hurt feelings. But it may be the husband's doing better because he's out talking to people and he's picking it up. And here she is. She's trying to homeschool children, keep a clean house, do a ministry, take care of her hair and all the rest of it. So it can be a challenge, and we have to watch again with the jealousy and things like that. And then we have to be careful of spending too much time with nationals. Now, that's not an anti-national statement at all. No, no, no. That's what we're there for, is to win them. You've heard it today. Win them to Christ, disciple them, give them the same burden. But what I'm saying to us is we have to be careful and balance this thing so that we're not spending all of our time with nationals and forgetting, man, my wife's at home. She has to see me all day long. Or those children are there. And then life is demanding. Climate's different. Now, it's hot here in Lancaster. But last Tuesday, I was in four different countries last Tuesday. Same day. I traveled Tuesday twice. Anyone ever done that before? But we were in the Philippines, and it was 95. I don't know. It was 95. You step out of Manila Airport, it's like stepping into a sauna. You just stay wet. Yucky. And that takes a toll on your body. You sit in church and you just, everybody. I was in four different places, preached for four different missionaries, preached Sundays a week ago at Elo for Brother Martin. Saw 80 plus people saved, baptized 20, some of myself, and just had a great trip. But, well, I tell you, if you think that doesn't take a toll on you physically, and if you get physically tired and you're not careful, you'll neglect your own body and obviously your family. There will be in many places sanitation problems. I mean, it's different out there. Diseases, parasites, the food. Now, I hope that if you're going to be a missionary, or you already are, that you're like I am. If I see something I haven't tried, I've got to see what it tastes like. I feel sorry for people that don't look at it that way. I mean, most of it, we tell all the weird stuff about eating balut and scorpions and jungle rat, but we don't tell about pineapple 2 feet tall. Bananas of all shapes and sizes and descriptions, and all the fish fresh out of the river or out of the ocean. So, but anyway, things are different. And some of those food may not appeal to the American taste at first. We just had a young lady with us who feels called to the Philippines, a 16-year-old, but a godly young lady, very serious-minded. But she wasn't quite up to eating Adidas and shoestrings yet. Does anyone know Adidas and shoestrings? Adidas are chicken feet, and shoestrings are chicken intestines. They put them on a little skewer and barbecue them in the afternoon. It smells so good. But anyway, your body may not be quite ready for that. Fear. How many of you think missionaries are all heroes, you know? They never feel afraid. You don't know missionaries very well then. Fear. The unknown is fearful. And here you are married, grown. You take care of yourself. You've done it for years, and you arrive in that place and you're so dumb you can't buy a piece of bread. Going to, some Americans think if they talk loud enough, they'll understand English, but it doesn't work that way. And then when you finally get your piece of bread, it's not the one you wanted. And you reach in your pocket, and you just have to hold out money and let them take what they want. Because you can't count money. And in some cases, there's war. Brother Don, how many times over the years have you all had trouble in Haiti? Six different times. Rioting and war. And for 6 months, my wife and I, we'd just gotten down in the jungle. We didn't even have our suitcases with us. We had flown partway up in a tiny single-engine aircraft, landed at a jungle landing strip, drove in a 1940-something German war truck. The 50 more kilometers took us another day. And then fighting started, and for 6 months, nobody knew we were dead or alive. We got no money, not one penny from America for 6 months. My wife cooked. You wrap food in banana leaves, cooked it in the ashes of the fire. So they're time. It's not always that way, but today's political climate, rioting and war, and one or several family members may have a difficulty adjusting to some of that. And you can't run to Walmart. Now, some countries you can today. There are Walmarts in China and there's Costco in Japan, but you can't always find those places. Even in church, you're sitting there and you don't have a clue what's going on. I speak French and Wolof and Kikongo and a little bit of Arabic. And then the first time I was asked to go, Dr. Sisk asked me to go to the Orient. I told him, I said, you've been in the sun too long. The first time, now here I am, I was 50 plus then, in Japan, sitting there. I had flown 14 hours from Detroit to Osaka, ridden 2 hours up to our Bible college, sitting in the Bible conference, not understanding one word of Japanese. And they said, the Japanese, that is, Christians, they said, Brother Godfrey looks like he should be able to speak Japanese. Looks has nothing to do with it. That's about the path. Now I'm headed somewhere, and all this is my introduction, but I'll get where I'm headed here in a minute. So what I'm saying is simply this: the business of ministry, the exhaustion, the worries. If you're not careful, listen, I'm being very honest in here. That can hamper your marital life. How does a wife feel romantic after coming home from an African market? When people used to do slides, I know you all are not old enough to remember that, but I often said with slides, if we could just put scratch and smell, we'd be a lot better off. Because those pictures just don't get it, all right? I had worked one day, I had witnessed the Muslims all day, and I went home and I sat down in my chair and it just drained me. Brother Pat Russell of here works in the same place where I worked for so many years. But I had been out talking to Muslims all day. I came home, I sat down, I'm exhausted. And I'm watching we had a lady that helped my wife part of the day. And I'm sitting there, I watched her go from the kitchen sink with the dishcloth and head to the bathroom. And I called my wife. I said, honey, I don't think surely she would do that, but just go check. And sure enough, my wife went in there. She's washing the commode, cleaning the commode with the dishcloth. When your kids come home and they've got little pimples, little places on their arms, and you squeeze them in the... Don't tell the other people I told you all these stories. And the worms pop out. It's hard for a lady to feel very romantic. Now, you may, but that doesn't mean she does. The husband may be gone. If you're preaching like in villages or you have several churches around, there may be times you're away from home for long periods. Not a lot, not much communication with the outside world. Or maybe today there's too much. My age, my generation, we didn't have telephones, let alone cell phones, computers, Skype, Magic Jack, and all of that. We wrote aerograms. Most of you don't even know what. Forget it. We wrote aerograms, and it would take weeks for mail to come. But now, you can. My daughter and Grant. I have two little clouds. My daughter's married to a cloud. Out in Nepal, we can watch them on Skype. And that's great. And it is wonderful. But it also has kind of a downside. And one of the downsides is sometimes you don't really turn loose. And it can make I'm being very honest. I think sometimes it can make the loneliness even worse. Now, I'm not saying we shouldn't do it. I thank the Lord for it. I get to see my grandkids that way. But it can be a blessing. Sometimes it can be maybe a little bit of a hindrance. Satan's attacking on every side. Remember, if you're going church planting, pastoring here in America, or you're going to mission field, you have a target painted on your back. He does not want you to succeed. And if he can mess you up in your family life, he has succeeded. And look, let me say it this way. Your family very often is your ministry. Because you lose your family, you've lost your ministry. If your family's right, what a blessing. It's one of the biggest draws for people to see you with the right kind of family, but you are a target for Satan. And then you may have been there for years, some of you, and you think, I wish I had somebody just to come and take my place and let me furlough. Missionaries need to furlough. I know some people think, well, why would they ought to just go out there and it's easy for them to say that, okay? But you can burn yourself out. You can get to the, you can get discouraged, and but then sometime you're there, you have a ministry and a work, and how do you leave? So with all these possible difficulties, the husband needs to be very careful that he does not get so involved in the ministry that he neglects his family. Dr. Chappell asked me to give him several suggestions about for missionaries and pastors too, and this was the one that several came to mind. This was top of my list. I believe that many missionaries leave the field because they some way do not have that proper balance necessary for their family. And I don't want to put too much blame. If you've been on the field, you know what I'm talking about. There's so much to do. I mean, someone has to teach that class. Someone has to lead the song. Someone has to work on the language. Someone has to go get the supplies. And there's such a temptation. There's so many things going on. And if we're not careful, we men, we're out there going and doing and accomplishing, you know, the Lord's will, I guess, that we might think. But if we're not careful, we can neglect our family. And if we neglect our family, we can lose our family. And we certainly do not want to do that. I want to stop just a moment before I give you some of these practical things here to say that I've given, I guess I'm sounding a little bit of a warning, but let me say that you don't have to lose your family. And if you have the right kind of family, that's the best thing you can have on the mission field. And actually, your family relationship can get better and better and better. Now, most of you, other than Brother Dryden over here, he's been married longer. Well, not married longer, but older than I am anyway. I'm sorry. I used to think, just see if he didn't agree with me. I used to think, well, I've been married 5 years, 10 years. Man, it just can't get any better. But it can. It does. I know y'all, you young people look at us and y'all think, oh, no, it's better. My wife and I, Saturday before last, we celebrated our 41st year together in the Philippines, out doing Bible clubs and soul winning with Brother Rick Martin. And most every year, we're in the Orient somewhere for our anniversary, mostly the Philippines, but we've been in China last year. And we've been married 41 years. We've loved every moment of it, and we love each other more, if that's possible. I don't know. You think it can't be possible, but it is. It's just like knowing God. The more you know Him, the more you love Him, and you get closer to Him. So I'm putting out some warnings, but I don't want to leave just warnings. I want you to know it can be wonderful. So how do we keep it wonderful? How do we balance it? And that's what I want to share with you and finish up. If you have looking at your notes now, all that up to here was all that was introduction. We'll get out shortly. The husband is to be the spiritual leader in the home and should keep a spiritual atmosphere. Now, I stated it that way on purpose. Men, it's not your wife's place to be the spiritual leader in your home. They will follow you. I believe that if a man loves God and he's living right, his wife will have no problem at all following him. But it's not the wife's responsibility. She should be a spiritual lady in her own right, but it's not her responsibility to set the spiritual temperature, the spiritual atmosphere in the home. And you've got to do that because when you first get to that ministry, if it's in another country, you can go to church and not get anything out of it. How many of you have been to another country when you're sitting there and it's all in a different language? And it's wonderful. You know it's good, but you're not understanding anything. Yeah, I mean, you don't know what you're singing. I mean, you've heard the music before. Maybe, but you don't have a clue. You don't know what they're singing. You don't know what they're preaching. Unless someone comes with it, in interpreting, and that's bad. I don't like interpreters. I preached down in the jungle. We used to go through two. When I had visitors, the visitor would come and they would preach in English. I would translate into French, and they would translate my French into Kikongo. The preacher, American preacher, forgot what he said by the time we got back. I just read a book about reaching Chinese that was written back in the 1800s. And the missionary was talking about the difficulty of interpreting. And he was using the example of an American speaker came over, and he was using a story about why do you believe the Bible's the Word of God? And he was telling this story, and he was using two people in a conversation. And one asked the other, why do you believe the Bible is the Word of God? And the answer came back, the Jews, my Lord. And this man, this missionary, rightly observed that to interpret those four words, the Jews, my Lord, would take 2 weeks. Because they don't know what Israel is, they don't know what a Jew is, they don't know what the Bible is, they don't know what relationship that would have to do with anything. You could not interpret those two words to Jews without going back and giving a 2-week historical background. And so when you have people come out, you know, and you try and interpret, and they talk about flying off the handle, or it's raining cats and dogs, and the missionary said, I have a wife and 5 kids, and the interpreter said, he has a wife and 5 little goats. It said it's raining cats and dogs. The interpreter said, there are little animals falling out of the sky. I don't know what that is. So y'all are laughing, but it's not funny when you're out there trying to do it. So, all right. The husband is to be the spiritual leader and set the atmosphere. Look, guys, men, this is our responsibility. Our wives will follow us. They'll love us if we love him. But we can't depend. Our wife should not have to say, let's pray before we eat. Our wife should not have to say, are we going to have devotions tonight? Our wife should never have to say, are we going to church? But it's our responsibility to take the leadership. Number two, related to that, he ought to lead the family in devotions. Now, that doesn't mean that the wife cannot do that sometimes. You may delegate at authority. There may be times you're away, and it's legitimate and it's fine. You can say, honey, I'm going to be gone. She'll do devotions. We found that family devotions on the mission field are so much easier than here in America. A lot of things are easier there, I think, than being in America. Because here, having devotions, sometimes just there's so many things. Honestly, I love working in third world cultures. Because people are so much more important than schedules. Nobody, they don't have watches. They don't care about time, Brother Pat, do they? I mean, it's just, Mike Dudow, an old man doesn't run. They say where he lives, Gawantu Akiyakanti, Sunu Jure Dom, Richu Amchuyon. If haste and hurry got married and had a child, they would name it regret. So don't get in a hurry. And that's the way they look at life. So really having devotions on the mission field often is easier because everything's shut down at our place in the middle of the day. And then we did most ministry in the daytime, and we had our family devotions at night. And I read a chapter. We had our devotions. I read the Bible and we prayed. I read a chapter out of some book every night to my kids. You think if you do that, even a big book, 15, 20 chapters. I mean, we read over the years dozens and dozens and dozens. I'd read missionary biographies. And when little kids, you know, now you have to, if you have little kids, you use Keys for Kids or use something simple and don't give them, you know, Calvin's Institutes or something if you're, don't give them that anyway. But I know that's a bad choice. That's a bad choice. But the reason I chose that is four volumes, you know. I was in America on one furlough, and I heard a preacher preach on the eschatological implications of the futuristic kingdom. And I heard another, no joke, I heard a guy preach, if I can remember, on the difference between dynamic and dualistic monarchianism. Now, y'all think I'm kidding, I am not. But anyway, if you've got little kids, that's not good devotional material, all right? Devotions ought to be fun. It ought to be teaching. If you're familiar with the book Shepherding a Child's Heart by Ted Tripp, that's what we're trying to do, is shepherding our children's heart and our wives' heart. Shepherding them toward God. And that's our responsibility. Okay, number three. Very simple statement. Learn to say no. I'm not going to take on another responsibility. But somebody's got to, I know, but they were doing it before you got there. Learn to say no. And that's very hard. And it's, there's, you, when you get to ministry, whether it be missionary or pastor, it's the same. It's exactly the same principle for pastors here. There's this, we look around us and we're overwhelmed. There's so many needs. And I think hearing Dr. Chappell today in reaching other people and giving them the burden and then letting them share and letting them help. But if you think that everybody, it's kind of like Moses in the Old Testament. He thought that everybody had to come to him to get every answer for everything. And God said, no. He brought some men and he took some of the spirit from Moses and anointed those men. So learn to say no. That's very difficult in some cultures. Every place I've lived, saying no is close to being impossible. They lie because they can't say no. Someone asked the Japanese missionary lady who worked with us out in the desert, and she's still there working with them, what's the hardest thing about living here? They thought she was going to say the heat or the dirt or the lame. She said it's living in a place where people lie every day. So if you made your money and Uncle George comes by and he says, do you have any money? And you say, yes, you've got to give it to him because you can't say no. So they lie. And I'm not suggesting missionaries would lie. But I would suggest missionaries have a hard time saying no. And men, when you get out there, learn to balance things out and just don't get in. You don't have to get involved in everything. Do it in stages. So learn to say no. Number four, protect your family. Protect your family. That's our responsibility. I'm not going to read the verses, but Ephesians 5 is very clear there. The relationship with the husband and wife, Genesis 2, go all the way back to that. When we lived for all those years in the synagogue, hardly a week went by there that some lady didn't ask me to be her husband. I say, I can't feed the one I've got now. If I married you, you two wives would fuss and fight and they would just cackle. But you have to protect your family. You have to protect them on the inside of the home. Today, there are a lot of dangers out there. They don't have to go out. You know, people, I don't mean this as an insult, but did you know a lot of parents are just so naive about what their kids have access to today? You don't have to have a computer to get on the internet. How many have a cell phone? All you have to do is push a button. Kids, it scares me today knowing what, I mean, I pastored a church. We had a great Christian school. And I can't get parents to believe me that they better control what their kids have access to. Protect them in the home. What they read, whatever. We had the benefit for all those years of not, we didn't have TV. We didn't have computers. We didn't have video games. We had a family. We used to watch the lizards do push-ups on the wall at night for entertainment. We had more fun. So protect your family in the home. Protect them outside. Listen, you better be careful. Now, do not take this as an anti-national statement, because I don't mean it that way. But you better protect your kids about too much familiarity with your nationals if they're lost people. Because you may not know what they do at their house.
That's right.
Again, I don't mean that. It's hard. I'm generalizing, okay? Some places you go might not be like that. It may be safer there than it, but that's not always the case. And you don't know. So you don't learn to cuss probably when you're in language school. But your kids will learn it. Yeah, they'll know things in a hurry that you don't even know what they're saying. And it's up to us. It's up to us to protect them. So be vigilant. Protect them. Number five, put the husband-wife relationship first. We usually generalize and say family, God, family, ministry. I want to narrow that down. God, husband and or wife, children, ministry. You said, Brother Godfrey, why you say that? Your kids they're going to leave. I have three daughters. They all grew up, got married, left me. And the guys did too. And now we don't have any. We have grandkids. I love it. They come and then they go. And that's wonderful. But keep your love for your wife alive. Because one day, I'm not saying don't love your kids. Certainly, no, I would never say that. Love your kids. Pour your heart and life into them. But your kids are going to grow up. Love your wife. Ladies, love your husbands. Keep that relationship under your relationship with God. Keep that first. We can't fool people very long. Here in the States, are there. Maybe even worse. I mean, you're under a microscope, maybe more there on the foreign field than you are here, just because you're a weird duck. All you've got to do is show your big nose. Most Orientals think all Americans have big noses. One of my dear missionary friends in Japan, it offended him all the time, big nose, until he found out they just wish they had one too. I mean, they didn't mean that bad. It was a compliment. And anyway, put the husband-wife relationship first. Number six, thought should be given to the development of each child. All children are different. Some, all you have to do is look at them and they cry for discipline. Others, you have to beat the socks off of them. Don't take that literally. But plan, work with your children, love your kids, do things with them. Again, we had the advantage of working with other missionaries who had kids in the same age group with our kids. We didn't spend all of our time with them, but we got together once every week. And we played games, and we'd go down to the French library, and they had these big old 16-millimeter, I'm really dating myself, 16-millimeter films with this little duck. It was a real duck, and it looked like it was talking, and it was cute. The kids loved it. We'd get together on like Friday night, and we'd do something like that. We'd play Monopoly. We'd play Scrabble. We used to play Boggle and Scrabble. You're talking about building your kids' vocabularies? Our kids love that. And so help your kids with the development. Number seven, times of relaxation and fellowship must be planned. They don't happen accidentally. Plan some time to do some things together. And then let me give you the next three, because my time is gone. The whole family should be involved in the ministry. Let your kids get involved. They will. That's one of the most humbling things, to see your kids, and one of the greatest things, to see your kids have a burden to reach those folk you're working with. So get your whole family involved. Number nine, it's wonderful if there are other missionary families close by. Back in the days, we didn't know what teen ministry was. Now everybody's talking about it. We did it, we just didn't know what it was. We didn't plan it that way. It just worked out that over the years, I worked by myself at first. The other missionary furloughed. I went up to his place to keep his work going. When he came back, we worked together for 8 years. We more than doubled ourselves working together. What a blessing it is. It has to be natural, but it's wonderful. And it helps your family. If you can work with people like I work with, Their kids' testimony helped my children. My children, I'd like to think my kids' testimony encouraged their children, and they're all mostly now serving the Lord. And then lastly, remember that the nationals are your people in the church here are watching you. And your family may have more of an impact as far as a sermon than your actual sermon. So just what I'm saying in this whole lesson is this. Avoid the temptation of getting so busy and forgetting that your wife, you put yourself in her position. You're out talking to people and you're in ministry and she's at the house trying to keep a clean house, trying to learn a language, trying to homeschool the kids, trying to prepare a lesson for the ladies group on Sunday. And it's really easy for us to forget and to go off and spend hours and not even let her know where we're at. And don't do that. Keep things in balance and keep things right. Love your wife, love your kids, and that would apply the other ways around as well. Lord, help us to be the men of God, the ladies of God we ought to be. In Jesus' name, amen.
We trust this ministry workshop session was a blessing to you. Plan now to join us in the second week of July for Spiritual Leadership Conference 2011 as Lancaster Baptist Church celebrates 25 years of ministry. Let us know if there is any way we can be a blessing to you.